This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Wednesday. So you know what's about to come up this hour. I'll get to that here in a few. I should let you know in hour three, there's some hopeful signs on the horizon about all this advancement in technology, AI. I'll tell you about something hopeful, something terrible about the GOP. We'll again talk at least briefly about influencer campaigns. It looks like we've got some impeachments coming down the pike, emails, all that, so much more coming up in the third hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. But it's hour two, and as promised, we are now going to pick up where we left off last night and continue our history, a history not many people know, about the Rhodesian-Bush War. If you missed a lot of the background, and so much of it was background, it was tribal stuff, and all the, if you missed that, I don't have time to recap it for you now. We must move on in the story. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes, you can go download the podcast. It's all free. There's no charge for any of this. Hour two of last night, we gave a lot of the background. Your 30-second to one-minute background is this. A man named Cecil Rhodes grabbed a bunch of miners, other people, yes, women and children, walked into a tribal land that had stuff he wanted. They started to mine there. There were two, historically there were more, but two main rival tribes there who'd hated each other, enslaved each other, slaughtered each other, raped each other, and burned each other alive for a very long time. At some point, they did it in front of the Europeans. There was a big uprising. The Europeans were mortified by such savagery, and they stepped up and they said, okay, this place is kind of ours now. This is done. You, all you people, you tribes, you tribesmen, you go over there. You other tribesmen, you go over there. Now, this is what colonization looked like a lot of the time. We're about to lay it out for the British Empire. Remember when your history professor in college was whining and crying about colonialism? That's actually kind of a ridiculous term because there are so many different ways to, quote, colonize a country. And let's be honest right now, colonization is simply a more peaceful form of conquest. That's what it is. So let's just call it all conquest, shall we? There is a spectrum, isn't there? We could go with the old, well, the easiest one would be Genghis Khan form of conquest. Hey, I really like your lands. I think I shall take my gigantic army in there and I will slaughter every man, woman, and child. I'll even send a rear guard back to your city to ensure I killed all the pets and then I'll move in. That is obviously an extreme end of that spectrum, but that's how conquest has been done. Then there are other types. The French would be more likely to kind of not really move in, but trade with you, right? They'll provide security. They'll trade with you. The Spanish were about as hands off with so much of their conquest as you can be. And I know about the Spanish conquest of Mexico and whatnot, but the Spanish and all their colonization or conquest, they really just kind of wanted the gold. Hey, just give me some gold. You have any gold? I'll take some gold. The British, in my opinion, did it smarter than anyone else, because here's what the British always believed about conquering, colonizing any place. The British believed that you should move in. They believed that possession was 9/10 of the law, and you can't ever really grab control of a place just by sending emissaries from afar and picking up a shipment of gold along the coast. No, you needed your people physically building homes and schools and roads. You need your people moving in and setting up shop. But wait, there's more. I don't want to make it sound all bad if you're against conquest. They also believed in integrating the local population as you moved in. The Brits did not want to slaughter everybody. They actually didn't want to send everyone away as refugees. And we're talking about this spot in Africa here, but Britain did this in many other places. They wanted to find a way where, yes, they took over. I'm not making them sound completely magnanimous here. They wanted to take over, but they also wanted to, hey, all these tribes and things like that, look, we'll help you out too. How about some clothes? How about a job? How about access to medicine? Let us help you too. You are going to work for us. You're going to work under us. Let's be honest. But we're going to help each other here. Your life will be better. And I don't want to act as if they did this just out of the kindness of their hearts. Of course, there'd be some of that. But really, for the Brits, and this is why I think it was so brilliant, it just made more sense. We want to take the place. We want to take it over. Slaughtering everybody generally doesn't work. It's hard to do. It's hard to maintain. As we've talked about before on the show, you can't really kill your way out of a problem. Usually, that's difficult. But if you can somehow make the people you're conquering make their day-to-day lives better, then you have to deal with a lot less rebellion, a lot fewer problems. They might even go along with it. And in fact, Rhodesia eventually, we're not quite there yet, Rhodesia kind of gets to that place for a while. But right now, we are post this little tribal war. The English are mortified. The Europeans in Zimbabwe are mortified, and they say, okay, enough is enough. Now it's ours. But what does "it's ours" mean? Well, let's talk about what it was before the Europeans got there. As you know, tribal lands. But what does that mean, tribal lands? Well, a tribe, at least these tribes, the way they worked, they would find some remote area. Well, it's all remote. Right? There's no civilization. They'd find an area that had things they needed. And what does every tribe need? Every tribe needs some way to eat. Maybe you're a hunting tribe. Maybe you do agriculture. Every tribe needs water. Let's find a river. Let's find something. Tribes are going to find locations that work for them, and that's where they're going to build their village, their huts. That's how it's going to work. And in many ways, the tribes were extremely isolated. The villages were isolated from each other. These were people who didn't build roads. They didn't have the wheel. You, as a young boy, I mentioned the two tribes yesterday. I'll mention them again. The Shona and the Indibeli. And by the way, the Indibeli go by several names. I'm just calling them Indibeli. The Shona and the Indibeli. If you were a young boy, you were born in this village, this Indibeli village, there is a reasonable chance you never left. Yeah, you would go out and you would go hunt, or maybe you would go to war or something like that, but you certainly didn't bounce around the country. We modern-day people, certainly modern-day Americans, anyone living in a first-world country listening to me right now, you've been on a road trip, haven't you? Maybe you still live in your hometown, but you know what a place 100 miles from you looks like, don't you? Of course, you're almost probably scoffing and laughing. Of course, everyone does. Maybe you've even been on a plane. That way of thinking is totally foreign to these people who live in this area. What's one of the very first thing the Europeans start to do? Roads. They start to build roads. They start to build train tracks. Why? Well, they're moving goods and services and people to and fro. And now they're connecting villages that had previously never been connected before. The African people, in some ways, they're moving to and fro in ways they've never moved before. And in some ways, they're getting run out of an area. I'll stop calling them English because there were people from all over the European world. If the Europeans wanted that area, remember, they decided they were in charge now. They said, you need to leave. Well, they were also integrating the local population, as I mentioned. They tried to do that. They really believed in doing that. Let's find a way to weave these people into our society. And remember, there weren't very many Europeans at the time. Not very many at all. They were way outnumbered by the tribesmen. So, crime, for instance. You don't have this large European police force. What do you do for cops? Every area needs cops. Well, that can create problems if you don't understand the area you're taking over. We'll get to those problems in a moment. There's about to be a rebellion, a first one, I should say. Before we get to rebellion time, I want you to rebel against pain. I want you to find, I want you to think right now, you're probably already thinking of it. What is the thing on your body that hurts every day? Maybe it's a head. Maybe your head hurts. Maybe it's your neck. Stiff neck, you turn and talk to someone, you look like Batman. Your elbow, old football injury in your finger. It hurts because it's inflamed. It's inflamed and it needs help. Your body's already trying to fight the inflammation, but it still hurts because your body doesn't have what it needs. Relief Factor's what it needs. No more masking it for a couple hours. Stop reaching for a pill bottle and get yourself the supplement, the 100% drug-free supplement that helps your body's natural response to inflammation. Relief Factor, over a million people have tried it. 1-800, the number for relief, or relieffactor.com. More next.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic, fantastic Wednesday, a hump day, doing part two of our history of the Rhodesian Bush War. Remember, you can email us your love, your hate, your death threats, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. The Europeans are starting to take over. They're starting to build roads. They're starting to build trains. They're starting to connect African villages that had never been connected before. They're starting to run Africans out of certain places. Now, this is why I keep bringing up the two tribes, because these two tribes, the fact that there are two tribes who hate each other, is always going to come into play in this entire story, right up to the horrible, brutal ending of it, not to give the whole thing away. Remember, before these guys even got here, the Shona had been conquered by the Indibele. They were slaves under the Indibele. Those kinds of hard feelings don't go away easily. And the Europeans just got there. They just arrived 5 minutes ago. It's hard to understand everything about the culture you're conquering. It's hard to understand old tribal rivalries and bad blood. It's hard to understand the religious significance, different significance of different things. For instance, and this is going to come into play, for virtually all these tribes, you know what was really a currency for them? Almost a sacred level of currency, a status symbol? Cattle. How many cows do you have? You have a lot of cattle? Oh, you've only got three? Oh, that sucks, Chris. I've got five. Must suck to be so low class. I mean, you're laughing, but that's how it worked. If you were a king, part of that status would be, look at all of our cattle. Well, what are cattle to the Europeans at this point in time? Just what? They're beef, right? It's beef or it's milk. It's no big deal. You raise them, you kill them, you whatever. It's just one of those things they didn't quite get. They also needed a police force, and they're trying to integrate the local tribes. But let me ask you something. You ever have any bad blood in your family? Every family has it. Maybe even in your town, a rival family, a rival this, a rival that. I want you to imagine this when it comes to Zimbabwe that we're talking about right now. Let's say your people had historically kept the Shona as slaves. And slavery, remember, was not touchy-feely. Not at all. Ugly things for women, children. Let's just say maybe your mother had been a slave of the Indibele. You're now 25 years old. Your mother raised you with those stories of what the Indibele did to them. The Europeans knock on the door of your hut, and they're handing you a policeman's uniform because now you are going to help police some of the Indibelli areas, and you have the power of law enforcement behind your badge. You don't have some oath you take or even believe in. You're a tribesman who's historically been at war, and that tribe has historically abused your family, and now you're about to get a weapon and two or three of your cop buddies, and you're about to walk into their area. Do you think there would be any temptation to abuse that kind of power? This happened often. The Europeans were having and will always have such a difficult time keeping the tribes separate from each other, understanding the depth of hatred they have for each other. There was African police abuse, African on African police abuse all over the place. Combine that with this. I already talked about historically how these tribes worked. They lived in their little villages. Now they're being moved onto what are essentially reservations. They're getting moved away from their historic homelands. They're not thrilled about it. Now let's add one more element to it. And this is a long, complicated affair. For the sake of not having this be a 10-episode thing, I'm fast-forwarding through some things. There gets to be a plague with the cows. What do the Europeans do when there is a cow plague? They do what any civilized society would do, and they start to kill the cows. I just got done explaining cows are sacred to these people, a status symbol to these people. As a European, you may have everyone's best interest at heart when you send a few guys onto somebody's land and shoot 20 of his cows in the head. He is almost undoubtedly going to interpret that act differently than you do. It's bad. Rebellion breaks out. In fact, you should know, I won't tell you the name of it because it's another detail. I'm already drowning you in details, but they consider the Rhodesian Bush War to be the second version of this rebellion. That's what they call it. This is the first of these rebellions. The tribes rise up, they rebel. They are not as technologically advanced. They do, however, have the numbers. It's slaughter. It's destruction. They're doing things like one miner, he had worked with 10 Africans on a mine for a long time. He then found himself with them crawling into the mine trying to beat him to death one night. There are some stories I'll tell you in a moment. Before we get to some of these stories, let me get to this. Let me talk to you about changing your cell phone service. And you know why? I'm going to read you this. This is a direct quote from Pure Talk. Because of your generosity through their Roundup for Charity program, they've been able to donate over $500,000 to America's Warrior Partnership, who stands on the front lines of preventing veteran suicide. Your patronage has allowed Pure Talk to donate 1,000 hand-sewn, made-in-America flags to your fellow veterans. So from everyone in the Pure Talk family, thank you for your trust, and God bless America. I read that verbatim. That's what Pure Talk wanted me to tell you. Has AT&T ever told you that? Verizon? T-Mobile? Save some money. Keep your phone, keep your number, or get a new one. They have those too. Switch to the company that does stuff like that. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Wednesday, talking about the land down under, Africa, tonight as we go. What, Chris? I'm not a geologist. All right, I don't know everything. All right, back to our history of the Rhodesian Bush War. The Europeans had set up the trains. They'd set up the villages. the tribes were hating each other. The tribes were not liking this European rule, and they broke out in rebellion. Now, this is nothing like the rebellion that will happen during the Rhodesian Bush War. This is completely disorganized. There aren't any central leaders. And remember, the two tribes hate each other as much as they hate the Europeans. So what does this rebellion look like? It sounds horrifying, but it's essentially small areas where panic gets inflamed, anger gets inflamed, and it's oftentimes led by local religious leaders, local tribal religious leaders. You know, all these weird tribal false religions. Local religious leaders would get their local area to rise up against, you know, the white invaders, the European invaders. I told you briefly about that story of the miner. Well, you know how most of that story went? He walked out of his house to find 10 Africans who he had worked with on the mine, not slaves or something like that, you know, working with them every day, lunch, wages, that they were co-workers with war clubs. This animal manages to wrestle one of the war clubs from him. They start beating him. He starts swinging back and beating them. He makes his way all the way into the mine shaft, where he rolls down into the mine shaft. And then he has more miners in the mine shaft who he's worked with, who he thinks will come to his aid, and they start beating him too. He starts fighting them off. He's fighting his way through the mines. These things happen. In another incident, two guys are sitting there. There are women and children hidden behind them, and the tribesmen have surrounded the mine, and they are essentially getting ready to kill everyone in it. The two dudes make a break for it. What are they making a break for? They're going for the telegraph line so they can telegraph for help so the women and children won't die. They book it. One of them, actually both of them, end up making it the entire way to the telegraph hut. One holds the door closed from the angry tribesmen behind him while the other gets on the telegraph machine and telegraphs the message out. Eventually, the door is kicked down and both men die with African spears sticking out from all over their bodies. This is taking place all across Zimbabwe at this time. But as I said, it is not unified. It is poorly led. And eventually the Europeans raise for themselves, or I should say they get back their army. It's a long story I won't go into. Most of their fighting men had gone to fight somewhere else and they'd been captured. They get their fighting men, and their fighting men are organized and they are well led, and they start to put this rebellion down. They put it down to such effect, the rebels are now starving, the rebels are hiding in caves, and the Europeans are dynamiting rebels out of caves, dynamiting the entrance, starving them. It's an horrible, horrible, ugly affair. Cecil Rhodes, the guy who started all this, he brings all the tribal leaders together, finally, after a very vicious little war. And he negotiates a peace because the tribes are starving. They're starving. They're done. Only now, this is the problem with rebellion. When you lose one, if you lose one, you are always going to end up worse off than you were before. If you're going to rebel, you better win. The whole history of the world proves this to be the case. It's almost weird when you look back and you wonder why so many people rebelled. We're going to rebel against Babylon. Oh no, we're all skinned alive. I mean, it just doesn't work. Now they have no more control. And now, after the negotiated peace, now Britain is no longer doing that. Well, it's not really our thing. It's kind of a private enterprise thing. Nope. Now, this is the 1920s. Now Britain says, no. It's our country now. Now they even gave it a name. South Rhodesia. By the way, in case you're wondering, yes, that name comes from the name Cecil Rhodes. And no, he didn't name it. In fact, he didn't even like the name, which is weird. I've always wanted a country named after me. That is not what he preferred at all, but Rhodesia. Only at this point in time, it's named South Rhodesia. Let's fast forward just a little bit. They are locking in their control of the area. They're building whole cities now. They're trying to modernize this country as possible, and along comes World War II. This part is going to be important for our story as we move along. I already told you the kind of people last night, the kind of Europeans who came here. These were not convicts who just got out. These were not idiots, welfare recipients. In many ways, it was the cream of the crop for Europeans and their children. They were tough as nails as well. Not these effeminate, you know, pinky out people, tough as nails. And they also had, because there were so few of them in a country that was so big, with so many bigger tribes, mandatory military service for all the males. If you were a male in Rhodesia, by the way, and females, the females didn't have mandatory military service, let me clarify, but the females were tough. The males were tough. We're not talking about sipping tea. These were farmers and miners and people who worked hard, and even the ones who were more wealthy. You hunted all the time. The elements, sleeping out under the elements, they were already a people familiar with the outdoors, familiar with firearms. And then when you add in mandatory military service, there may not have been many of them. At about the height of Rhodesia's army's power, there was only about 20,000. That's a tiny army. They were all tough as nails. Tough as freaking nails. Because, look, you grew up in Africa shooting lions. That's what you did. They were a tough people. World War II comes along, and Britain calls. Hey, Rhodesia, we need some guys. Now, I need to pause here. And I'm going to have to make this disclaimer many times as we continue to tell this tale. It can be easy to think about this story as white versus black. I'm sure you've done it in your mind several times because the Europeans were white and the tribesmen were black. And in some ways, that may be accurate. But when I said they were trying to integrate the Africans, That Rhodesian army I just mentioned at the height of its power, like half of it was black. Their elite troops, like half of them were black. The Rhodesians didn't see this as a white versus black thing at all. The loser commies worldwide, it's very similar to the commies we have today. That's how they sold it worldwide. Look at these Nazis oppressing the black people. That is not how it was. They were working in many ways hand in hand. That's exactly right, Chris. They used good old-fashioned race communism to sell this locally and internationally when things kicked off. The Rhodesian military was not just white Europeans. The Africans were getting training, getting everything, again, integrating them in. Britain, fighting World War II, needed men. They said, Rhodesia, can you help? Rhodesia, full of a bunch of tough people, said, absolutely, tell us where you need us. So many Rhodesian men, black and white, stepped up to fight. The Brits got concerned that there would be no men to go back to Rhodesia if they all died. So they spread the units out all across the everywhere Britain was fighting. They wouldn't let the Rhodesians go all to one area because they'd worry about it. Hey, send 50 here, send 100 there. And they went and fought like lions for Britain in World War II. Their service is incredible. But something else, I mean, World War II was awful, but the result of it was actually wonderful in some ways for what is now Rhodesia. I'll explain in a moment. Before I get to that, let's talk about finding someone new for your company. Maybe you have a spot open because someone quit. Maybe you had a dirt ball or have a dirt ball you need to let go. Maybe you're expanding. Maybe you need someone temporary. Maybe you need some elite talent to help you get to the next level. Where do you go? Me personally, I would go to the number one hiring site. That's where I would go because that's where the employees already are. ZipRecruiter's specialty is saving you time and money. You don't have all day, every day to hunt for the new guy. You don't. You don't have to. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse and try it free. ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse. You're about to find that person. More on this next.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Monday. I swear, if you're suffering, we'll be back to politics in 10 minutes, but we're doing part two of the Rhodesian Bush War. Now, we just finished the rebellion, the Europeans put down the rebellion. Britain essentially decided, okay, that's enough of all this playing games. Now it's a country. Now it's our country. In fact, we're slapping a name on it. Now it's called South Rhodesia. And, well, the way it works is, of course, World War II breaks out. The Rhodesians, as I mentioned, black and white, military men, went off and fought valiantly for the Brits. That will end up mattering later on. But something else happens, and this is the ugly part of life, the ironic, I guess I should say, part of life, in a lot of ways. War can be good for economies. Certainly, if you are a country that produces stuff, war can be very good for you. Why are the Europeans in Rhodesia to begin with? It's rich with resources. The land is wonderful for agriculture. There are things to mine there. And guess which empire needs stuff right about now? Well, the Allies. Well, all of them, but the Allies need it. The economy starts booming. Booming. There are huge checks coming into Rhodesia because the Allies need stuff. Well, this is Africa. We already mentioned it's a rough place. It's been a rough place. Just has not become a modern continent ever. What do you think happens when the Rhodesian economy starts booming? The word goes out. The word goes out to all the other countries around there who may be struggling. There's always a famine, always a war, always a plague. And more Africans start pouring into Rhodesia looking for work, looking for an opportunity, and they find them. But as usually happens, the war doesn't last forever. And after the war is over, let's say it's the year 1941 in your Rhodesia, just for the sake of argument, and your economy starts booming. Everyone knows it. Everyone in Africa knows it. And so let's just say you get 2 million Africans from other countries coming in to take advantage of the opportunity to feed their families, clothe themselves, you know, all those things. But then 1945 rolls around and beep, war over. Well, there's still a market, obviously, for crops and chrome and the other things they mine, but not near the market it once was. Well, now all those people have already come in. Now they've already brought jobs in. Now there's not as much economic opportunity to go around, yet the people are still there. This creates a situation that from the outside looking in looks terrible. The situation being this. You have these extremely wealthy, modern-looking, mostly white, although there were plenty of black people. There were extremely modern, wealthy-looking towns that would have looked like any town in America, any city in Europe, popping up only on the outskirts. There are extremely run-down, poor, all-black shanty towns that start popping up. The reason this is so disastrous is post-World War II, there was a thing that was happening globally. It wasn't just to Britain. After World War II, countries that had empires overseas started to give them up. Sometimes they fought hard for them. You know, this was the French in Vietnam. They eventually lost that, but they fought hard trying to keep it. Some countries just flat out walked away from it. But no matter what, There is a macro movement happening on planet Earth post-World War II, and that movement was, hey, you super powerful empires with a colony here and a colony there, and Britain's in India, and the French are in Vietnam, and everyone's in Africa. Hey, you know what? No more. No more. It's time to walk away from your overseas empire. And I'm going to put this in quotes because I don't necessarily believe in this, but the, quote, decolonization movement has begun now. Well, how do you think Rhodesia looks to the rest of the world when everyone else is giving up their overseas territories? And now you look at this insanely wealthy, prosperous African country. These other African countries, for the most part, they're sucking it up. They're doing terribly. Well, Rhodesia, certainly the Rhodesians or the Europeans in Rhodesia, they're thriving. And the African peoples in Rhodesia, they're on reservations, just like our Indian reservations. They're on reservations where the Europeans put them, or they're in shanty towns. And there's another part of it that just looked bad. And this is actually how we're going to open our show tomorrow. So let me ask a question. Who should get to vote in any society? Who deserves a say in the government of any society? I think you would probably agree with me that shouldn't be everybody, right? You don't want 12-year-olds to vote, of course. If there's some serial killer getting ready to be executed tomorrow, do you want his vote canceling out your vote for president tomorrow? No. Okay, so we'll at least agree on that. It shouldn't be everybody. Okay, so that means there should be limits. What limits? How do you form a nation, a good country, if that's what you want to be, a good, prosperous country, a country considered to be free, while also putting limits on who has a say in the government? In Rhodesia, the Africans did not have a say in the government. No say. None. And that's about to be a problem. We'll have to continue that tomorrow. Before we do that, let's do some more politics, shall we? Let's talk about some AI, impeachments, influence operations, emails, more. Next.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.